The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Portland's favorite morning roast.
Who was the second hottest Golden Girl? Oh, you want to rank the hot Golden Girls?
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
If Blanche is number one, was she the first TV cougar?
Ooh.
Andy Dirk Johnson, Brandon Sprague.
You're going to say Estelle. You're going to surprise me, and I'm not going to judge you for it. Estelle seems like she was probably wild.
Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 The Fan.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number three. Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. Hope your football Fridays are off to a great start.
We want your pee.
Your podcasts, they're up at 105.1thefan.com for the first 2 hours of the show. You can find the rest of them throughout the rest of the morning.
Jeez, oh, Pete's.
Those are two solid additions.
I might get Jeez, oh, Pete's tattooed on my body.
Jeez,
I'll
oh,
be
Pete's.
Honest with you. It's a hilarious thing to read on somebody's arm, Jeez, oh, Pete's.
I'm going to start. I want to try and implement that into my daily dialogue.
Why didn't we just do that with Chris Level? I totally blanked.
Jeez, oh, Pete's, Chris.
Next person we get for our dirty poll.
Number 10 on Monday.
When they say something like, this team's being slept on, I think they win the whole thing.
Whoa. Jeez, oh, Pete's.
Whoever's question turn it is needs to go, whoa, jeez, oh, Pete's.
Jeez, oh, Pete's, that's how you feel?
And
see,
just move on.
Once Teddy Ballgame, he's already doing the mimicking thing, right? He'll pick up words.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
See, that's a good one.
Jeez, oh, Pete's.
Because if he says that out in public, that's adorable.
Yeah.
Rather than he drops an F-bomb and
or
everybody starts looking.
Yeah. He drops a Jesus. There's a Jesus every once in a while.
Yeah, you get kind of judged for that one at a young age, man.
But you got a little toddler, three or four, just, you know.
Jeez,
oh, Pete's in a restaurant and people are busting
Put his hand in his diaper. Jeez, oh, Pete's. what do you got there, Teddy Ballgame?
When he ends up dropping a Jesus, we usually try and spin it into a Cheez-Its. You go that, you know, Cheez-Its.
Wonder
the
who
pivot.
He learned it from.
Where did that one come from?
Mm.
I do have two of those things that I am a little worried about if I will be judged, because I don't know how it will play outside of the house, but we certainly have had a lot of fun this week. Two additions to the Johnson household have been I bought him a fart button. So you basically press it and it's got like 30 different fart sounds every. And it's on the foyer table, and so every time any of us walk by it now, we just press the fart button as you go in and out of the rooms. And it's been a delightful addition to the house. I'm not going to lie. Solid, solid upgrade to the sound of the house.
Yep.
How's that going to play in preschool today?
Mrs.
I don't
Johnson
know.
How, if
Dude,
that's a
she
delightful.
Found it hilarious. The other one was, she can lie all she wants. She's been pressing the button too, okay? If you're going to press the button, you're telling me you think it's funny. The other one was I did buy him a couple of Nerf guns, and we were shooting at each other
yesterday. Oh, he's at the right age for that.
That's what I figured. Yeah. But now he started, because we played with them, he started to use the word like, where's my gun kind of stuff.
Put his hand in his diaper, jeez, oh, Pete's.
I'm terrified what I'm going to get, what I'm going to hear from the preschool pickup today.
Jeez, oh, Pete's.
You know, your kid was asking for his bullets today, and, you know, that's not a good thing at preschool.
Coincidentally, you bring up Teddy Ballgame.
Yeah.
We have two things of breaking news.
Oh, what happened?
Oh, what do we have?
The first needs to be established. Great dad moment for one Andy Johnson. He put a kid Rydell 49er helmet on his son during the 49er preseason game.
Well, it also was a test for him, too, because he has two kid Rydell helmets, and they happened to be playing each other last night. So that was the impetus of that.
A Charger.
There's a Charger one and there's a 49er one.
Put them on the table.
I said, who are we rooting for tonight, buddy? And he ran into his room and he grabbed the 49er helmet and put it on while he was drinking his bottle.
It's red, white, gold, and black. It's just an elite.
He was just running around the living room with his butt cheeks out with a football helmet on. It was adorable.
I was so proud. I saw that on my story. I went, oh my God. Yeah.
Trying to figure out how do I get my bottle underneath the face mask, but then the chin strap's kind of in the way. It was adorable last night.
And the second bit of breaking news, it's actually sports news, and I don't want to interrupt the whole segment.
Oh, we got to. What do we got?
There's something weird, and like you can point to the economy on this. I don't know. Shams Charania just reported that a guy named Mark Stad has just bought the largest shareholder of the Minnesota Timberwolves and Lynx by buying out Mark Laurie's 4.5 valuation.
He just bought it. Well, he was a minority owner with that new ownership group.
Okay.
So he was already there.
So now he's buying out the primary guy?
Why are we flipping organizations right now in the NBA?
Is A-Rod still involved?
It doesn't say he's out.
Okay, so A-Rod's still part of the group.
He just bought out by Mark Laurie, who was A-Rod's
primary
friend.
Guy. Yeah.
Right.
There's something really odd. What's happening in the NBA? I don't know if there is a direct correlation with economy stuff.
Yeah.
But this is a bad look for the league to have like four franchise. Suns, we'll have to wait and see on that one. That's weird with Ishbia.
There's a lot of push that Ishbia might be forced to sell the team as well.
Well, and we've always heard the rumor and rumblings behind the scenes. I've heard two scenarios. Now, I'm not trying to say this is tied or going to happen.
Right.
Things I've heard in the background, I just can't help but go, is Tom Dundon going to long play the Blazers or short term it to flip and make money to get to either the NFL? Or I've heard he has a lot of interest in having a Charlotte-based baseball team.
Mm. Yeah.
Or maybe he jumps in an Ash. I don't know. I don't know if either of them.
I don't think location matters as much because he lives
totally
in Dallas.
See
but
Dundon, I think he'll be in if he can get this thing, get through the renovation piece, and he's watching things get flipped. Also, if he can stick in it when the expansion happens and that cash flow comes in.
Yeah, that's a year or two away.
Right, but if he gets the renovation
and then
with the expansion.
All of a sudden, the Blazers are worth $6.5 or $7 million. He flips
he
out of
there. He put in $800 for it.
Yeah.
Right.
He gets a couple billy to walk away. I'm just asking out
flip,
loud.
Dude, yeah.
Because the league is watching teams be flipped like stock.
Right.
And that's not normal.
That's
this
not
has
what
never
you
happened.
Want.
No.
Either.
It's also tough because a lot of these examples, I don't know enough about them. Like, why would you just become the controlling owner of a team and then sell?
Dude, he went to court against the old owner.
Yes, I remember that being very contentious.
Because they got the team at such a cheap price point that the old owner, Glenn Taylor, was like, no, the hell, I'm going to sell this for $1.5 billion. And the court held it up and said, no, dude, you agreed to that price. It's
that was
a done
the price.
Deal.
Yeah, you can't go back on that. It's also difficult because part of me wants to ask a larger question about the NBA, while also you have to acknowledge almost every case is individual, if that makes sense.
No like, doubt about
the
it.
The Mark Walter thing in L.A. is a very unique situation that has nothing to do with the health of the NBA. It has to do with the guy who might be going to federal prison who needs billions of dollars in a short amount of time. This one's weird. The Ishbia one.
Also weird.
Who don't know what's going on there. Like, the majority, if I remember reading correctly, why he's in trouble is that he put up a lot of collateral in buying the Suns of the stock of his company.
He used his stock as basically to buy the Suns.
Right, basically saying I'm good for the funds. And for those who haven't followed the stock, it's down about 70% since he bought the team. And so the value of the stock has just
plummeted,
fallen through the floor. And so now does he even have enough money in order to continue to own the team, right? And
right.
So there's individual circumstances here that I'm like, okay, that makes sense. But it continues to be a bubbling trend of why is there so much turbulence in the NBA? You just signed a $7 billion TV deal. You were on the brink of expanding by two teams, which is going to mean how many hundreds of millions of dollars for the rest of the owners?
$77 billion, by
the way. Is what the TV deal was, right? So,
over
like,
11 years.
Financially speaking, that's solid. Mm-hmm. The expansion money's coming in the next two to whatever the time frame is. Like, that's all good on the like. I don't know. It makes you feel like there's something under the hood of the car that we're unaware of.
It could be TV deals.
Very well could
are
be.
Pretty terrible now for everybody in almost any sport, really. Like, the NFL doesn't have to do TV deals because they're so
the NFL's
popular.
King, right? And there's no the NBA and Major League Baseball thrive on their local TV deals.
But they haven't been.
And that market has cratered because there just isn't the money in local television the way that there was 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah, so I don't know. As just a sports fan and a big NBA fan, I don't know how to view this. It's just bizarre. I don't recall seeing so much
this many in a short amount of time
with owners and flipping franchise, especially an organization like Lakers as an example. That's one of the top three or four franchises in all of sports.
All of sports, not just the NBA.
You know, so like you just don't, and you're right of like it's individually based, but like it's just odd that it's happening all in the NBA. And this is a really weird look. It could just be a nothing burger.
Right.
But it's a really weird look to see a guy who just went to court for a long time to get his price point, got it, and in what? Have they been there two seasons?
I've not been there that long.
I think they've been there for two seasons, but he's like flat out got the ownership stake for a year to sell it.
So we're at, in the last whatever how many years, we have Minnesota, Portland, obviously.
Yep.
The Lakers twice.
Mm-hmm.
The Suns are a little bit older than that, right?
Ishbia
has been around
Celtics
a couple more years than that.
Celtics,
thank you. Celtics just happened.
Yeah.
Anybody else I'm forgetting?
The Mavs.
Mavs, thank you.
Who, by the way, Cuban was going to court against them, and then he dropped his lawsuit against them.
He did.
Boy, they're doing some shady-ass stuff, too, in Dallas. If even Tommy Two Nichols is alone.
Right.
The Dumonts would like a word. They came in, and they're offering 10 games for a season ticket package.
Okay.
People investigated, found out one of the 10 is a preseason, and they didn't admit that. So, like, Tommy Two Nichols ain't alone in the cheap doing weird business department.
It's going to be even funnier if the preseason game's one of those games that's not against another NBA team, too. It's like a team from Israel or something.
Like a Maccabi Tel Aviv or something.
Coming over to play.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of another one in the NBA.
Is there anybody else
like
that's
within
sold?
The last, like, 3 or 4 years?
Does this all go back to the first Laker one when they came in at $10 billion? And totally jumped the shark,
well,
and everybody's like, oh,
I don't
my
know,
goodness.
Because the Celtics sold for a pretty good price point.
It was like six they valued it at.
And that was pretty good in that moment, right?
Yeah.
The Blazers came in double of what Phil offered.
So here, this is since 2023. The Bucks sold in 2023.
That's right.
Jimmy Haslam bought the Bucks, $3.5 billion. The Hornets sold. Jordan sold his majority stake in 2023. Mm-hmm. $3 billion valuation, and then all the other ones we mentioned. Dallas, Phoenix, Portland, Boston, and L.A. And now you add Minnesota back, where technically Ryan Smith bought the Jazz a little bit before that.
That's right.
2020, 2021.
Yep.
So that's about 5 years ago.
Ballmer's kind of in that wheelhouse.
Ballmer's
too,
a little bit around
ago.
There. Yep. Yeah, it just, I think what we're saying is the antennas are up. It doesn't mean anything's wrong or anything's going on necessarily now.
Well,
but
we know the economy sucks.
Yes.
And a lot of these guys are using stock, not actual money.
Right.
Which is what rich people do.
Yes.
To get stuff.
You use your wealth to buy things.
So I don't know if it's just a weird coincidence. Again, to your point on the individual instances, very well could be. Just, you're not seeing this in baseball, are you? The Padres just got bought, and that guy just seemingly stepped in, and everything's good in the NFL.
Teams don't go. I mean, that's very rare
for NFL
teams.
You don't see teams flipped in the NFL.
Jody had to sell the Seahawks. That was a forced thing. But other than that, are we like
the
Panthers sold a couple of years ago, but they forced the owner out. So those are forced sellings.
You see minority stakes in teams.
Yeah, teams will buy a percentage, a 10% thing here.
Mark Davis sold, I think, the controlling interest. Did he not? Did I read that right?
I think you're right. I think he's still the governor, but maybe doesn't own the biggest percentage, if that makes sense.
Right, because he's not the most deep-pocketed. So you see instances where minority stakes get sold. You don't see outright flipping of franchises.
No, because why would you walk away from owning an NFL team that thinks like an absolute cash cow?
Yeah.
I've got some NFL stuff in the notes. We'll get to that in the next segment, including one quarterback. Is he, I don't know, putting his team on alert to a certain extent? We'll talk about that in a moment. But you mentioned something, and this has actually been in my notes the last couple of days, so it kind of seamlessly fits right here as we wrap up the opening segment of the 8 a.m. hour. And you asked the question, are we sleeping on a team like Arizona in the Big 12? And there was a great write-up on Yahoo from Dan Wolkin, who went down to Tucson. And it's one of those things you kind of forget that Noah Fifita is still in college.
God, it feels like forever
Does
ago
it not?
We watched him.
Like, he seems like he was forever. It was Jed Fish. Jed Fish tried to get him to come to Washington. He stayed loyal to Arizona. He's now been there for 2 years under Brent Brennan. He's got another year to play. They won 9 games last year.
Dude, he replaced Jaden DeLora, who feels like a decade ago.
Does he not, right? Washington State legend Jaden DeLora. And the write-up is essentially how Noah Fifita is a very rare breed in modern college football. He does not have a very optimistic outlook in terms of NFL success, right? He's undersized. It's just not.
He's a flag football Olympian.
Yes. And so you're cashing in while you can cash in,
right,
if you're Noah Fifita. And they go down, they talk to him, they talk to his offensive coordinator who's worked with him for a long time. And he basically said, the offensive coordinator said at the end of last year, he said, quote, I sat him down, said, dude, what's your plan? Man to man, brother to brother, you know there's real love here. What are you going to do? Because if you're leaving, I need to think about what I need to do. But if you're staying, I'm here with you. Mm. And he said the exact same thing. And according to both of them, he's turned down basically multi-million dollar deals each of the last 3 seasons to stay at Arizona and be loyal. And they're returning a lot of guys. We kind of slept on them with Brent Brennan. Fish leaves. The first year of Brennan didn't go well. They win 9 games last year. And now to your point in the Big 12, he's one of those rare guys who's going to end up playing every year of his career in college at one school that's a smaller school. It's not Ohio State. It's not Georgia. It's not Oregon. It's Arizona. His head coach left and wanted to take him with him. How often do we see the quarterback follow the coach? Quite often. Didn't happen in this case. And I don't know. I was reading through this and kind of the person he is behind the scenes and what he's doing with some of his money, turning down bigger paydays. And I found myself reading the article and rooting for Arizona and Noah Fifita this year.
I've always liked Noah Fifita. His first season with Brennan, that didn't go particularly the way that he thought it would, right? And then they have this kind of bounce back year. it's never easy to transition from one coach to another. Some guys can step into the top flight programs and seamlessly have it, right? See Miami in the past, Ohio State now. Other programs, it takes a little bit of time to build into what the new coach is. Some guys can ride the wave, David Shaw, and then eventually the wave comes crashing down a little bit, can't keep up with the Jimmys
right.
of the sport. Whereas I think Brennan came in and it on paper looked like a pretty good thing, and it just didn't go exactly to plan. That being said, now it's interesting. I know it's Arizona, it's talent. We don't have to do a whole segment on Arizona, but they're an interesting team of like lying in the weeds, right? The team that nobody is giving conversation to. This is their defense. Redshirt senior, 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 redshirt senior, senior, transfer redshirt senior, transfer redshirt junior with Daylon Austin, and redshirt senior. They have
Daylon Austin's an Oregon transfer.
I know. Yeah. They have one sophomore in their starting defense. This is all senior-led defense, not to mention what they have at receiver with redshirt junior, redshirt senior, transfer junior, transfer senior.
Yeah.
Like they're kind of experienced. I don't know if that means talent is going to rise above the BYU's, Utah's, or Tech's, but you pair that with Noah Fifita, and now they're 3 years into their system. You kind of can't help but go, man, I think we're sleeping on Arizona. The way that some of these programs sneak up on ASU a couple years ago, right? You get a lot of teams with hype that don't live up to it, and then you get teams that kind of fly under the radar and go, holy crap, Arizona has a game this week, and they're 8-0. I don't know what their schedule is off the top.
I got it right here. This is maybe the only thing that will hold them back because the Big 12 does – you get this in every conference, right? You get teams who just get the schedule gift. They play at BYU. Talk about a game in week 2 to keep an eye on. Arizona's at BYU in week 2.
It's a great football game.
Right out of the gate, yeah. Week 2. Week 2 is a really good slate. Week 1 kind of blows this year. Week 2 solid. So that's one to keep an eye on for Big 12 races right away. They do have to go to Texas Tech as well. So the two heavy hitters in the
if
conference.
You can go 1-1 in that, though, and you can ride out the rest of that.
Yeah, pull one off as an upset.
I mean, their offensive line, their left tackle is a redshirt sophomore, so he's 3 years in. Their guard is a redshirt junior. Their center is a redshirt junior. Their right guard's a redshirt junior. And their right tackle's a redshirt senior.
A lot of snaps, a lot of football.
Like, dude, your defense is loaded with experience. Your receivers are loaded with experience. Your quarterback's coming in now in his fourth year. Like, man, Arizona is kind of one of those, like, I hadn't really considered it. And then I knew we were getting Tech on today. And I'm going through the Big 12 yesterday. And I'm like, we're not talking about Arizona State.
Nope.
We're not talking about Arizona at all.
Nope.
It's mainly BYU, Texas Tech.
That's it.
And, oh, by the way, Houston also for a lot of people. Yep. And Utah is kind of returning some stuff with Scally as the new head coach. So, yeah, man, I'm not ready to tell you that Big 12 is the second conference in college football. It's just merely to say more teams in that conference could be pretty damn good than we give it credit. And I don't know what their true depth is on a competing basis, but – maybe we look at the college football playoff and they have multiple teams this year that we give real consideration of winning a game or two.
It's funny. I almost feel like the SEC Big Ten debate is the same as the Big 12 ACC debate, where there's no doubt in my mind going into the year the SEC is deeper than the Big Ten. They have more good teams than the Big Ten does, but they don't have maybe the
top end.
Right? Maybe they don't have a team that could beat Indiana, Ohio State, or Oregon.
Right.
And I feel this, the Big 12, there's no doubt in my mind they're deeper than the ACC. Like, when you rattle off all these teams, that to me, there's like 5, 6, 7 good teams that I would classify good teams in that conference. I don't feel that way about the ACC. They had 7-5 Duke in the conference championship last year, man.
Like, Miami
against
was
Virginia,
fifth in the standings, right? By technical tiebreaker.
But they have a team that got to the national championship, so they have a contender where I don't necessarily view any Big 12 team as a contender. So,
but do they have an elite like team, debate. I think, is what they need the most.
They got to figure that out.
It's so stupid, but also it's just the way the sport works, man. You have to have the one elite team that goes to a certain threshold in the playoff to garner the respect for the rest of the conference.
One other reason, if you're looking for rooting for Fifita, I love this in the story. Basically, it said last year after games, if they won games, Fifita would not do post-game interviews because he wanted his teammates to get the credit.
Oh, that's awesome.
And every time they lost a game, he was the only guy that went up there and answered questions to kind of become the face of it. There's other stories about, like, defensive coordinator having a daughter. There was no post on social media, and he'd show up to the house with a gift or for a surprise birthday dinner. He just seems like a genuinely good dude. Dude, he's been down there a long time, and I'm rooting for Arizona.
Their four running backs, by the way, are all seniors.
That's a when you look
it's
at that,
just so senior
age
laden as
and
a
experience
team,
is it matters. It's a big thing, especially early in the season, man. So we'll see if Arizona ends up surprising this year. They came out of nowhere last year to win 9 games. Let's go to the National Football League. Is this a red flag for a franchise? How do we view the comments? We'll talk about it next on The Fan.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
P1 Harley identifying right now at Aylin A. Arizona plus 1,400 to make the college football playoff.
Just, like, you might not like Arizona. They could totally dud out. I just, 1,400 to make the playoff.
Jeez, oh, Pete.
If Hammond sucks, who's the backup at Tech? Good luck with that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
BYU, like, I think they're really good and could very well win the conference, but I don't.
They still have a guy wearing 47 playing quarterback.
That's a bit of a problem until it's not. You know what I mean? And then Utah with Scally. We'll see.
How much does that change if they beat BYU week two?
If Arizona beats BYU,
they cut in half. Are they like plus 700 now?
Doubt if they beat BYU
value,
on the road.
That's great.
That
value.
Is good value. That's good value. Yeah, it's an. I don't know when the next time I'm going to be at Aylin A is, but if I'm up there, I might put that ticket in. Let's go to the National Football League, shall we? We get another slate of preseason football. Continues tonight. I love that the NFL in preseason does a thing where they play Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then don't play on Sunday. That always makes
sense.
There is
Sunday.
Oh, is there games on Sunday this week?
Your Seattle Seahawks.
How many? Is there just one game or is
just
there multiple?
Just the one, and okay. I think it's one of the networks. I can't remember if it's CBS or Fox or who has it. But all of their network partners get like one national preseason game so they can get all their production stuff.
Monday Night Football was that last night, right? On Thursday night they were doing the Texans and the Raiders game. Well, I stand corrected there, but it is funny. We get more games tonight. I watched last night. This was one of the more notable things out of the NFL yesterday because he's a quarterback and he's on a team that we have big expectations on of, like, are you going to prove that you were a couple of years ago? You've been close, but in the last couple of years, you've not been very close. And this was said by Joe Burrow yesterday about the sense of urgency this year in Cincinnati.
I'm trying to put it out into the world. I'm trying to manifest it. I'm trying to show our guys the urgency that I have and that I want us to have as an organization to go and make it happen. You can keep pushing it down the road, or you can talk about it now and say this is the year. And, you know, I'm tired of saying next year, next year, next year. This is it. You know, your life is too short to keep pushing things down the road. And I'm trying to instill some urgency and some intensity in everybody to go and be great every day and try to go make it happen.
It's a very, very unique team and quarterback because they were so successful early on. Like, getting to a Super Bowl in your second year in the NFL is rarefied air, right? Like, it just doesn't happen very often. And then you had the AFC title game appearance the next year where Kansas City nips you at the end on an out-of-bounds hit, and you're like, Cincinnati felt like they were one of these. Kansas City was this year in and year out contender. Buffalo has been this. I know they haven't won a Super Bowl or been to a Super Bowl, but every year they're in the playoffs. Every year they're in the mix. Mm-hmm. Baltimore, to a certain extent, I know it didn't go their way last year because Lamar was banged up, but they've been a good playoff contending team every year. Whereas Cincinnati's now going on a little bit of a playoff drought, and it's for varying reasons. Defense has been, booty. The offensive line hasn't been very good. So they have not been to the playoffs since 2022. They're going 3 straight years now of missing the playoffs, looking at potentially a fourth. Mm-hmm. And the idea of, like, I love the way Burrow put that. If we always just think of, like, oh, he'll get one eventually. It's Burrow. He's good. Like, he's talented enough. At some point, he's going to break through. You keep saying next year, next year, next year. Next thing you know, you're 33 years old, and you're like, what happened to my career?
Exactly.
It flew by quickly. And so I don't know if antennas are going up. They certainly should have high expectations in Cincinnati. Him staying healthy is a massive part of that. He's not been able to do it, but he's the guy that I think we've always circled of, like, if there is a franchise quarterback that wants to force his way out, it will end up being Joe Burrow, and it felt like a red flag of that yesterday of, like, it's kind of now or never.
Well, what I find interesting, because I've also kind of said some of that too, is I don't know how true that really is, though. Like, Cincinnati, from an ownership standpoint, bit of a broke boy in
Without
the group of rich people, right?
Without a doubt.
That's been well noted. Their stadium is a dump.
Yep.
But he's got debatably the best receiver core in football.
Mm-hmm.
His running back, as we noted yesterday, went for 1,000 yards and is pretty damn good. Tight end plays good. his biggest question marks are, will the defense finally be good, and his offensive line protecting him? I don't think it was a good sign that in their preseason first snap,
took a big sack.
Yeah. I mean, that's not great. The fix there is general manager coach. It's not quarterback. So because we just don't see guys do that, Peyton Manning was a Bronco not because he wanted out of Indy. It was because he had a neck injury that nobody thought he could play football anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Favre became a Jet because Aaron Rodgers was a real thing.
Yeah, they drafted his replacement.
That's not at Cincinnati, and they've given him what he's wanted. If they fall short, Zach Taylor, goodbye.
Yes.
General manager, I can't remember if they just hired him or if he's been there for a minute. Like, that might be a thing, and they're going to have to revamp that way. I don't know if he's realistically going to ask out, but he should be saying this stuff. The standard of a quarterback of that caliber every year should be MVP level play, and the team should want to win the Super Bowl, and that's the expectation. When you fall short of even the playoffs,
three straight years.
Yeah, man. Like, and I understand he has been awesome. The year they didn't make the playoffs, he could have won the MVP with his
stats.
2 years
ago, yeah.
But he can't stay healthy, and they're not making the playoffs, and he's in tier one, and Lamar Jackson has a down year from a team standpoint, yeah. Tier two.
And he's got two MVPs.
And I've always felt there's been a bit of a double standard with how we view some of the guys in the position and not others. And Burrow deserves the recognition of one of the best. But yeah, dude, you should be putting in the universe. It's Super Bowl time. That's his expectation. That's Ja'Marr Chase's expectation. It, you know, they escaped the brutal injury from Shamar Stewart that we thought had happened.
Mm-hmm.
That was good news. The expectation in Cincinnati is at the bare minimum, make the playoffs. And then when you get in the playoffs, anything goes. But I don't know how certain I am that he asks out versus they revamp it and they get him a new voice.
Yeah, it's interesting because, too, they this year, like, I don't know how I would feel about their offensive line. I know they've tried to spend resources the last handful of years to improve it.
Mm-hmm.
Time will tell if that improves. To your point, I was watching highlights of their first preseason game, and he played a lot of snaps, and he took a sack on their first drive. And that's never a good thing because you're not going against the full D-line of the other team. But they go out and add one of the best interior defensive linemen in the NFL. They did a very rare Cincinnati thing where we just kind of assume they're going to slow play this. They let their other defensive linemen walk. They're not giving contract extensions on that side of the ball because they can't afford it. And then they traded a first-round pick for an elite D-tackle in my mind. And so I think you're going to be better in that area. He is a very interesting quarterback because when he's healthy, the numbers are usually there. Offensively speaking, to your point, weapons-wise, it's hard to match them. Offensive line's still a big concern for them, but he almost feels like he is a guy who is still drafting off of, to a certain extent, going into the Super Bowl so early in his career. Like, when you go to the Super Bowl in year two, we immediately put you into this conversation. Jaden Daniels is this last year going into the year. Like, some people had Jaden Daniels as a top five quarterback in the NFL.
No doubt.
365 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Joe Burrow's better than Jaden Daniels. He's been more consistently good. And when he's healthy, he is very good. Nobody doubts that. But it is funny how some labels will stick to guys, and not making it to the playoffs and not winning playoff games will be the stench around some players. And we're going to talk about one here in a moment who's never done it. But when you do it earlier in your career, you're almost given a pass for what follows after that. And not winning a playoff game in 3 years or even making the playoffs. Or hell, I'll even take it to another set. They haven't really even sniffed a playoff spot in 3 years. Like, I know they might have been 9-8 the year that Burrow had the good numbers and their defense was terrible.
But you didn't trust
it. But you weren't a contender because your defense was awful.
It was so bad.
I'm not saying it's all on Burrow. There is context to all of this because it's ridiculous to put it all on him. It goes back to the point of why some things stick to some quarterbacks and some guys seem to evade it. And you're probably right in the long run of it's so rare to see guys in the prime of their career get to that point. I'm just playing out the scenario in my head, like, follow this road for a second. It's the same problems that's plagued them, right? Like, we try and improve our defense, it still is in the bottom third of the league. We've tried to spend resources on the offensive line, but Burrow cannot stay upright, and he's getting beat up to hell every single week.
And they're changing their offensive approach this year, too,
they are,
by the way.
To try and keep him more healthy and to try and protect him a little bit more. And if those are still issues and he stays relatively healthy and puts up huge numbers again, but you miss out because of those two issues, like, that's, I think, where you go to the place mentally of, does he just sign up to do it again? Like, does it actually get to that point? Because I think your larger argument is correct. When you advocate to pay for your wide receivers, part of this does fall on your lap because
absolutely,
they shouldn't have paid T. Higgins as good as he is. Should have traded for him, should have balanced out the money and where you spend it a little bit. But it just, when you have such a broke owner and an organization who's already seen it with one quarterback, anytime he has a quote like that, we go to like, oh, is this the next Carson Palmer?
It's hard not to have that thought, right?
Yeah.
The other thing, too, with Carson Palmer, If Carson Palmer doesn't have the knee injury in that playoff game, we don't. That Cincinnati team was really good.
Absolutely, they were.
It's just, it's a weird kind of butterfly effect, right? The injury happens. It doesn't work out. He wants out. He retires. He ends up in Arizona and has some success before his career is over. I don't know. As somebody that's been on the other opinion, I've kind of gone back and forth on this.
Yeah.
Following a new offensive approach, putting him in our center more, you know, kind of have a more explosive run game. Chase Brown ended up, what'd you say, we're just barely over 1,000 yards?
Just barely over 1,000 yards last year, I think, yeah. And so, that's, by the way, without Burrow the majority of the season,
exactly.
Too. So teams are kind of game planning to stop the run.
You can't help but wonder if the clock is going to tick on. You did pay T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. If there's a way to improve your team, it is certainly the value of T. Higgins, because you're always going to choose Ja'Marr Chase.
Without a doubt.
Even though I think T. Higgins is pretty damn good.
He could be a number one in a lot of places.
I
in
agree
the
NFL. With that.
Hello, L.A. Chargers.
No doubt. You're just going to capitalize on what that return package would be. So there are elements they still have. But, dude, this is kind of the year. We know Zach Taylor. This is it. He's Shane Beamer of the NFL. It's like, if you don't get this done, we know this is over.
There's a McDermott vibe to it this year of
absolutely.
Like, you kind of got to go do something. Let's see what you could do. They're a fun story. I mean, it's just one of those storylines in the NFL, him saying that yesterday. I was already very intrigued by Cincinnati, that we knew that they were heading into a pressure-packed season. And then you hear the sense of urgency from a quarterback, and it is unique. And I'm excited to see what they do in a very weird division. Baltimore, we cannot overlook because
Baltimore's
of what they've been.
Yeah.
Cleveland, I just expect to be ass again, but there's good pieces on that roster, sans the quarterback position, and Pittsburgh's still playing a 57-year-old quarterback.
Yeah, but they got him Pittman, and he has Metcalf. Like,
I know, you got weapons.
He's got a nice little thing around him. His coach, at least, is always above 500 as a coach.
Yeah, McCarthy always is.
So, I don't really know what to make of Pittsburgh. I don't look at Pittsburgh as a contender.
But they've been a playoff team.
But, like, let me ask you this, because I know we're against it. When you talk about just that division, the AFC North, you know Cleveland, scratch them out. They're not in this.
Nope.
But if all of these teams live up to what their top end can be.
Stay healthy, things go right.
How many are Super Bowl contenders to you? Because I only have two. I don't look at Pittsburgh as a legitimate
either.
Super Bowl threat.
I think their defense is really good. I do like their weapons, but I have a hard time seeing it. So I'm with you there. If everything goes according to plan, I would put Cincinnati and Baltimore in that
category.
So
you think they
both?
It's
a big if, because Cincinnati's got to get a lot better defensively and their offensive line's got to improve drastically. Baltimore, defensively, they were not good last year, and so that has to improve, but you made a change in head coach to go to focus on that side of the ball, and Lamar, to the point, has to stay healthy.
You're getting some guys back from injury from Baltimore on the pass rush. Your coach is defensively focused. We know the secondary and what they have back there.
Mm-hmm.
Their linebacker play is probably their biggest question mark defensively. But we've also seen, like, if Derrick Henry doesn't fumble in the beginning of the year, they have a couple more wins, probably win that division.
Such a crazy game.
It was a weird start to their season, all that unraveled for them. But, yeah, I kind of tend to agree with Burrow is just so good that if that defense is just middle of the road.
Like, you have to be a playoff team.
Yes.
You have to.
Yeah.
Just be the 17th best defense in the NFL.
Yeah.
And if you keep Burrow upright, you're a playoff team.
And if Joe Burrow goes to Denver as an example in the first playoff game,
right.
Denver fans going to say, we're going to win. They're also clinching a little bit because it's Joe freaking Burrow.
He still has, even though they haven't been to the playoffs in 3 years, there's still that vibe
exactly,
around him.
Exactly, yeah.
That's the unique thing about smoking at Joe Burrow.
Jeez, oh, Pete.
Talk about big expectations, man. They keep growing for this player. Is he in this conversation? Also, another quarterback talks about what he needs to improve on. Some more NFL next. On the Fan.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. 8:48 on your Friday morning. Happy Friday morning, everybody. It's a football Friday. Feels good. Feels good.
Can I ask you a football question?
Fire away. We're talking football right now.
Were you going to do the Herbert thing here?
I might hold it for the top of the hour.
Okay. Basically my entire life, even before the BCS,
mm-hmm.
Anytime I'd consume preseason college football stuff, it would be with the poll results, right? The
yes.
APs, the coaches, all that. mostly in my life, the team that won the title almost always came in the next year pseudo won. You probably give me some standalone examples of when they didn't.
Yeah.
But mostly that's how my brain
remembers. And if not number one, you'd be top four, top three or four.
It has, is it not a little odd that Indiana came in like seventh?
It's very weird.
How did they not start one?
Especially when the court ruling happened and they were able to add two 37-year-old seniors back to their defensive line.
Right. Who
were
That's both, on hold.
This morning a judge reversed that or put it on
the
hold.
The appeals, 10th so appeals court.
Oh, they'll go to a different judge.
Go find a different judge
that says
it out. Yes.
He'll play.
Put a stay in it.
How many snip snaps do we get during the
Daly
season?
Daly will be in Indiana.
You can play two games. Nope, now you're ineligible. What? Now you can play those two games. Nope, now you're ineligible. He's going to play like six games on the year.
But I'm not. It's am ridiculous. I not wrong here? Like, you may not believe Indiana repeats, but like to not even be in the top three is pretty wildly disrespectful, is it not, to how we used to do this?
What made it even wilder is the number of first-place votes that they actually did get, because it tells you that there is a big gap between the perception of what they are this year.
Yeah.
Because it's all an aggregate ranking, right?
Right. So
it's,
did they get eight?
They had eight? They had, other than Ohio State and Oregon, State had 40 first-place votes, Oregon had 14, Indiana was third in first-place votes. So they're...
There are a voters who think people, they're like between 10 and 15.
Right. Notre Dame then had six.
How do you, like, can you do that? I know they may end up like 12th this year. I don't know.
I can ask the question aloud, but if I were an AP voter, those are two different things. It's one thing to ask the question of like, okay, historically speaking, when college football programs replace the number one overall pick and the Heisman Trophy winner, there's just a drop off.
Yes.
Now, doesn't mean you're going to go 6-6, but to the idea of going undefeated and running the table again, I have a hard time seeing that because I do think their schedule is a little more challenging this year. But there tends to be a drop. I can question that, but the idea of ranking them behind some other teams, I'm with you 100%. Wait until we find out where they're in the dirty poll. Wait until we get to Indiana.
I am curious to find out where they're going to be at the dirty poll. And we get to catch up with our good friend Dom Fisher, right?
I would assume we got to go to him when we get to Indiana.
Yeah?
Yeah, we got to get the play-by-play guy on. Yeah, they get – the opening of their season is laughable. Like, it just – they're going to – like, I brought – I think – did we talk about this while you're here? I can't remember. But the idea of, like, how – let me play this game with you. How long until you're interested in watching an Indiana game? Are you ready?
Well, I will probably catch
their
non-conference.
They legitimately, in week one, they're the big noon game against North Texas. So it's 9 a.m. on Fox. They're right out of the gate, week one of college football.
Hot take. North Texas will not do what they did last year.
Hot take. Agree with you.
Agree with you since half their team went to Oklahoma State.
They're Oklahoma State now.
Their former coach is shooting armadillos in his backyard in Stillwater. We can get to that fun with audio at some point if we want. How long, though? Like, I'm not saying you're going to, like, we'll be curious of, like, check highlights, like, kind of how we did with Mendoza last year early, right? But you weren't watching their game against Old Dominion. So play this out. How long until you're watching over 40% of an Indiana game? Are you ready?
Over 40?
Over 40%. North Texas?
No.
Howard?
No.
Western Kentucky?
I won't watch any of the Howard game.
Right.
Or Western Kentucky.
Northwestern's your first Big Ten game.
Yeah, that's a Friday night on Fox, so there's a chance.
Definitely.
Because there's
Is there
not
another
much...
game that Friday night?
Let me look. Week 4?
Because you could dual box it if you want, but there might be, because sometimes there's dueling Friday night games that go on simultaneously.
That's the one, though, because I do want to see if, does Chip make any difference with
Clemson and Cal is at 7:30. Northwestern Indiana's at 5 p.m.
Yeah, I'll watch, that's it.
Clemson having to go to Cal is hilarious.
Miami has to go to Stanford.
To Stanford, I know.
Clemson going and playing at 7:30 p.m.
7:30 p.m. Like, South Carolina, a long way away, man.
If they lose, how loud is Dabo's excuse going to be?
Oh, the travel's ridiculous.
It's travel's ridiculous.
Yeah. And then they play Rutgers in Nebraska before they go on a stretch of playing Ohio State,
so
Michigan,
say,
USC, Washington.
Well, Nebraska, yeah, that Indiana that game.
Yeah, the Nebraska. But the point being, Nebraska's the half. That's the end of October.
No,
or the
my
middle
answer
of October.
Is Northwestern because it's Friday.
So you won't pay. We won't watch closely until we get to the end of September, which is unfortunate, but they're going to be 4-0, 5-0, 6-0 going into the Ohio State game.
I mean,
I'd have a hard time seeing them not be 6-0.
We are different here, right? Like, as a show, you absolutely could kind of say this about Oregon.
I disagree strongly. I think
Oklahoma State's going to be better than last year. But
Boise State might be 11-1 in the college football playoff this year. I'm not saying it's a murderer's row schedule.
I don't think Boise State, Oregon's going to go the way it did last time.
Neither do I.
I think Lanning's going to have a nice little can of whoop.
But I also am not going to compare Boise State and North Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Or Oklahoma State and Howard.
We agree
now,
on
the Portland
that.
State game you give to me, by all means, that's your Howard opponent. That's in week three. But I at least have an intriguing storyline for those games that it was at Sands, Oregon. Is Boise the best team in the G6? And Oklahoma State, not that intriguing, but they have a quarterback who made a lot of noise last year. Mestermaker was one of these there's at least a storyline that I can get involved in. I will not watch a second of North Texas, Howard, or Western Kentucky football this year. No matter the opponent. That's egregious.
Come on.
That's aggressive.
You'll watch half a quarter.
I won't watch more than 15 minutes of North Texas, Howard, Western Kentucky.
Are we sure about Indiana this year? North Texas, second quarter. I don't know.
The only one that would do anything is the North Texas game, but that I'll be in Eugene getting ready for the Boise State game. So maybe I'll have it on the iPad.
North Texas is the best of those three.
That's easily the best of those three.
Easily? What do you know about Western Kentucky?
Nothing.
What about Howard?
Dude, don't mess with the Hilltoppers.
I'm just going to go out on a limb. It's Texas. I'm just going to go out on a limb. Shot in the dark.
What's the line for Oregon-Boise State?
The line for Oregon-Boise
State... Is that sub-17?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, because, like, I hear what you're right in the sense of, like, Oklahoma
State... Like,
they
could be the G6 rep. That's at least...
That's fair.
A storyline.
Very fair. I also think with Oregon returning that talent, that game shouldn't be remotely close to what it was last time.
Let's quickly
go. It shouldn't
we'll
be
go.
A punt return away from losing at home to Boise State this year.
Boise State, 24.5 is... I'm just looking on ESPN. 24.5.
What's North Texas Indiana's line? 35.5?
40.5. What do you think it is against Howard? Let's play this fun game real
not
quick.
Not listed.
Oh, yeah. Can you not
it's
do
one
that?
One of those like minus 50s and they
I got
don't list
Ducks it. Ducks minus 25 at Allen
Edge. Come on. They have you winning the game by
what about Western
points?
Kentucky? Let's see the Western Kentucky line. Hold
that
on.
Also might be not listed.
Hold on.
47.5. I mean, it's got to be
something. Yeah, it's not listed currently.
Yeah, see, it's they're not even worth betting.
If you want a fun one for week one.
They're not going to have Oregon-Portland State either.
No. Oh, yeah, you can't bet on that game. And you shouldn't watch that game unless you're a Duck fan. A fun line for week one. Would you lay the wood, Ohio State, Ball State, 50.5?
We got to go. What are we talking about this?
About big expectations. Will this player live up to them this season? Because we're putting him in conversations. A little more NFL audio. We'll kick out the final hour next. Football Friday on the Fam.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.